We'll do like we do in the past weeks. We'll start off by reading the beginning of the verses, and then we'll try and explain. So the verse starts at the beginning of day 3, and it says, "Vayomer Elokim," this is verse 9, chapter 1, verse 9, "Vayomer Elokim," and God said, "Yikavu hamayim," the waters should gather, "mitachas hashamayim," from beneath the heavens, "al makom echad," that all the waters should gather to one place, "the seira'eh hayabashan," the dry land should now be seen, "vayehichin," and it was so. "Vayikra Elokim," and God called layabasha eretz. So he gave a name to this dry land, and he called the eretz land. "Ulamikve hamayim," and to this gathering of water, "karayamim," he called it sea, the ocean, the sea. "Vayara Elokim kitov," and God saw it, and he said, "It's good, it's great." So here we have the kitov that we didn't have last week, which we spoke about. "Vayom Elokim," and now God said a second thing, and he says, "This dry land, tache ha'aretz desha," the earth should sprout vegetation, "Asev mazriya zarech," we herbage yielding seed, "Eitz peri osa peri," that the trees should yield fruit, "lemino," it should be the same kind as it, and we'll explain what that means, "shazar bar la'aretz," that it should contain its own seed on the earth, "vayichein," and we'll explain what all that means. "Batotze ha'aretz desha," so now the ground, the earth yield, brought forth its vegetation, "Asev mazriya zarech leminehu," herbage, yielding its seed of its kind, "the eighth osa pri," and the trees yielding fruit, "ashazaru boliminehu," where its seed was its kind, "vayalakim kitov," and God saw that it was good, "vayihi erev," "vayihi voker," and it was evening and it was morning, "yom shalishi," and now we have a third day. So this is it. This is day 3. What do we have? We have the separation of water and the dry land. So we now have down here on earth something called dry land, and we have an ocean, and then we have on this dry land that something should grow. The earth should grow, there should be vegetation, there should be herbage, there should be seeds, there should be trees, and this is what happened on day 3, and now we need to discuss a lot of things. So number 1, Rishonim, the Ramban, Rabbeinu Bachai, they write like this. By nature, we spoke about it, how there's many different elements of the ingredients of the world, elements to the world. Now, by nature, water should always float to the top. So if you have a choice, if you have dry land, you have earth, you have dust, and you have water, which one would go on top of what? If we would leave nature to run its course, what would happen is that the water would always rise. The water would flood. The water would cover over the earth. Now, what God said was, Hashem said that let the water gather. If you look at verse 9, it says, "Yikavu hamayim," let the water gather, "mitachas hashamayim," it should go underneath the heaven. With that statement, the water was told to go down. "V'seira'a hayabasha," and the dry land should come up, which means that the world right now is going against its nature. Because right now, we have the oceans, and the earth, the dry land, is actually higher than the ocean. And if it wouldn't be like that, then the ocean would just flood the dry land. But by its nature, really what should happen is that the water should always want to go on top of the dry land. So right now we're in a situation which is completely against the laws of nature. What we have is that earth is higher than the element of water. And that's the world that we're living in today. Our sages teach us that every moment the water wants to flood the land. That's what's going on. Every single moment, every wave that comes, we're sitting on the beach and we're watching these waves come. Every one of those waves, if it would be given a choice, its nature would be to come and flood the world. But God says no. Where did God say no? Right over here. God said that the water should go down and the earth should go up. That gives the ability to the element of earth to be higher than water, which enables us to live in a world which isn't flooded. So that's point number 1. Now, point number 2. This is from Rabbeinu Bachai, and he's quoting a Medrash. He says an amazing thing. He says the word yikavu, yikavu, the root of the word yikavu, should gather. The root of the word is kav, which is a line, which means a measurement. What God was saying was, Hashem was saying that the water should have a measurement. That means it should have a limitation. The water should stop and have a limitation to its desire to go beyond limitation. I'll explain what that means in a minute. I just want to say one more quote from the Medrash. The Medrash writes like this. On day 1, what was in the world? What was in the world on day 1? water. Everything was full of water. Now, imagine I tell you, take a space which is full of water and make all that water go to one place. That's an impossible statement. Well, let me clarify this. If I tell you that there's water in this room where you're sitting right now, the entire thing is full of water. There's not an inch where there's no water. And then I tell you, take all that water and put it in one place in your room. That's an impossibility. Because if the water was everywhere, how are you going to take that and put it in one place? You can only put something in one place if it's limited. But if it filled everything, you can't take that and put it in one place. And that's a strong question. That's a very strong question. We're taking water because on day one, there was water everywhere. That's what it was. Then he separated it and he made this firmament, and there's Shemayim, which separates the upper waters and the lower waters. But now the earth doesn't, you can't, all you see is water. And then Hashem says, let all that water go to one place. That's an impossibility. And sorry for the disappointment, but yes, it is an impossibility, and God could do it. So what he did on this day was, he did another impossibility. He took something which was filling everywhere, and he limited it to a certain place, which is called the ocean. But really, right now, we are living, and this I think we should contemplate. If I ask you right now, what space do we live in? I think the answer is we're living in borrowed space, which doesn't really exist. It shouldn't really exist. Because where we used to be water. And there's enough water to fill up the space where we're living in right now, because it used to be full of water. But God said that all that should somehow condense and become very, very limited and only be in the ocean. And there should be something called dry land. But really, the ocean has in it enough water that it should fill up the earth, because that's how it started. So we're living in a world where we think we're secure. We think we're living in dry land. And really, at any moment, the water in the ocean should really fill up the earth. I'll share with you a thought slightly off topic, but just along the lines of what I'm saying. I was on a plane this week, and I was thinking about it, that my scariest moment of flying is always as they're landing, and you're sort of seeing the ground, and you're seeing the plane shake, and you hope this pilot knows what he's doing. And then as soon as the plane lands and the brakes are on, and it everything slows down, I feel safe. All right, back down to earth. Everything is good now. I feel safe. And I realize this time that it's ridiculous. Because why am I safer when I'm sitting on the ground than when I'm sitting in a plane 40,000 feet up in the air? It's the same God that said that the water shouldn't flood this space that I'm in. The same God that said that I should be able to fly a plane. It's the same God that's holding up this world's existence and not letting the waters from atop of me come down into this earth and flood me. So I'm relying on God. And if I'm relying on God, it doesn't make a difference to him if I'm in a plane or if I'm sitting in the land. If I'm living in a house, I'm not any more safe than living anywhere else. So this is the concept that the water was really everywhere. And the water was limited and put in a small place. But really, inherently, the water should be everywhere. But God said, put a stop to the water and the water should stop over here. So if that's clear, and thank you for that comment. We are living on borrowed space and we're living in borrowed time. Excellent. Everything that we're on is borrowed, and it's borrowed for a purpose. But we should be there and fill it up. That is our job. So let's take this a little bit deeper. We mentioned last week from Rabbeinu Bachai. Was it last week? Was it? I think it was last week. We mentioned about the numbers 1, 2, and 3. And we explained how the number 1 and the number 3 are pairs. That means that the number 1 is when there's unity, 2 is when there's total disunity, everything is split, and 3 is when we make a triangle. When we take the disunity and we say that both of these two things both come from one place and it's actually one. So number 1 gives, if you want to say it in a funny way, you could say that number 1 gives birth to number 3. Number 2 gives birth to number 4. And we'll talk about that, God willing, next week on day number 4. But when 2 splits again, it turns into 4. When 1 splits and unites, that's number 3. That means that there's a parallel between day 1 and day 3, and there's a parallel between day 2 and day 4. So let's just talk about now the parallel. What parallel do we see between day 1 and day 3? Assuming that we're correct, that day 3 is unity, of the pieces, and day one is the unity without any pieces. But they're both about unity. What is the parallel between day one and what happened on day three? So this is my two cents, and I'm basing it on the words of Rabbeinu Bachai, but I believe this is what he means to say. On day one and day three, what happened was that God made a limitation, just in a different way. On day one, you know what? Before day one, you know what filled the world? God's infinite light. What we would call in Hebrew, we would call the Ein Sof. God's infinity filled the world. There was no room for the world. Where are you going to put the world? There's no space for it. Now, God said, Bereishis bara Elokim, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. At that moment, he created a space, which you would call a limitation of his light, so to speak. And in that space, he put the heaven and he put the earth. So what happened on day one is we took something which was infinite, and we can't understand it. It's beyond our comprehension. But he took something infinite and created within that infinity a space for the world to exist and for us to operate in. On day number three, the same thing happened, except that on day number three, we already have heaven and we already have earth and we have water. But the water is the expression of the infinity on day number three, because water is infinite. Water doesn't have an end. We spoke about it, how water naturally will go everywhere. Water doesn't have a shape. It doesn't have a form. It doesn't have a point where it stops itself. The water will just spill everywhere. And the water is day number three's expression of God's infinity. And once again, God took that infinity and he made a space, which is called dry land. That makes sense? Day one and day three are parallels. Both of them are about unity, and both of them are about making a space in that unified place where we're going to make a little hole to allow human being to come on day six and operate within that space. So day number one, you have a unified light of God, and there's no space for a world. God creates a world. A space for the world. On day number three, we have water everywhere, which is the physical expression of infinity. And God makes a space in the water, and he takes that water and he moves it and allows dry land. And now, once again, there's dry land, which one day, which will be day six, there'll be room for man to come along and hopefully fill the space with light, or, as we know, fill it with darkness. And over the years, it's been a mixture of the two. So day one and day three are parallels. They're both about unity and about making a space within the seeming infinity, which it is, and allowing the space for us to operate. So that is point number one of what I wanted to share with you, and I hope that's clear. Moving on. Moving right along. The verse writes that, let me find the space, the place over here. Vayom Elokim, verse 11. Says, God said, Tache ha'aretz desha. The earth should sprout vegetation. So Rabbeinu Bachai writes, and this is a real big fundamental. Rabbeinu Bachai writes that what just happened now is huge. This is the first point where there's what you call growth taking place on earth. Because until this point, there's nothing in the world that grows. Everything just is. God created heaven. He created earth. He created the firmament. He made it firm. He made dry land. But everything just is. Nothing moves, nothing grows, nothing changes. At this point, in verse 11, was planted in the earth the ability that things could grow. And that's huge. That means something could be what it is, and out of it could grow something else. The ability for growth took place right over here. And the Rabbeinu Bachai writes, if you look at the wording of the verse, "Vayomer lekem tachei ha'aretz," the aretz, the land, should grow vegetation. Which land are we referring to? The land of the first verse. Bereishis bara Elokim, es ha-shamayim ve-es ha-aretz. And like we said, on that day, all he did was just made stuff. He made ingredient that one day will be able to turn into many different things. On day one, he just made matter, material, which one day will be able to shape earth. On this day, he went back to that ingredient. Like we said, we're always going to go back to day one. And we're going to move and form things into day one. And he made a formation out of that earth of day one, which would allow it to produce. It would allow this thing from day one to produce, give forth vegetation. And in this, Now, Rabbeinu Bachai goes on and he brings a medrash, and the Rambam brings it too. And this we really need to understand. And he writes that, you know what else was created on day three? Trees. There was vegetation. Trees, fruit. You know what else was created on day three? The trees of the Garden of Eden, of Gan Eden, was created on day three. So when we talk about these trees being created on day three, and we talk about growth, we're actually referring to, on a deeper level, to the trees of Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. Those trees were created on day three. Now we know that Gan Eden is a place, which is a garden. It's a spiritual place. It's a place where we all hope to get to one day. And there's trees over there. And those trees, when were those trees created? The tree of life, tree of knowledge, which we're going to learn about, God willing. And all those things were created on day three. Why and what is the significance of these trees being created on this day? What does it mean to start with when we say that Gan Eden, when we think of the Garden of Eden, we think of this spiritual place where we all want to go, where Adam was before the sin. What does it mean that it's a place of trees? Right? If I were to ask you, you describe to me how you think the Garden of Eden looks. How you think this lofty, rosy palace, how do you think it looks? Right? We wouldn't say, oh, you know what it is? It's a garden. It's got some trees. It's got an apple tree. It's got a pear tree and oranges and whatever it is. That's not exactly how we would describe the Garden of Eden. Why did God make this place, Gan Eden? And he says, you want to know what's inside it? There's trees. And you want to know when I'm going to make those trees? I'm going to make them on day three when I'm putting the ability of the world to grow. Right, that's my question. So this is the understanding which I'm putting together from many, many different places. A lot of it I heard from Rav Moshe Shapiro. This Vasamas talks about it a lot. Many different, the Ramchal, Maral, whatever name you want, you could plug that in. But this is the understanding. What's going on is that the world has the ability to grow and produce fruit. That means that I could do something, I could plant, something will come out of it. The highest expression of that growth takes place when the human being comes along and does a good deed. He does a mitzvah. When we do a mitzvah, when we do a good deed, what we're actually doing is we're planting a seed. Every good deed that we do, we're planting. We are in the farming business. We plant. That's what we do. And when we plant, something grows. But that thing that grows is a spiritual thing. And that's our reward. But when we plant, a tree grows. When we do a mitzvah, every mitzvah that we do, we're planting a tree. Now, where is that tree that we're planting? Right today, right now, we're all sitting together, a group of us, and we're studying Torah, and we're doing mitzvah after mitzvah after mitzvah, thousands and thousands and millions probably. And where are these trees that we're planting? And the answer is they don't grow here, but they grow in the Garden of Eden. And this is beautiful. Gan Eden is a place of trees. It's a place of fruit. But who makes those fruit grow? We make them grow, but when do we plant? We plant when we do good deeds. When we study Torah, we do good deeds, and we become closer to God. What we're doing is we're planting, and things are growing, but we don't see it. And I'll explain a little bit later why it is that we don't see it. Why is it that our eyes don't see this tree? But you want to know what the Garden of Eden is? It's a place of trees. Now, these trees are spiritual trees. But the concept of them being a tree means that somebody planted something and out of that something grew. But where does the world have the ability that it could become more than what it is? That something could grow. That something could be put in. A seed could go and it could grow. That took place on day three. So what day are we going to make the Garden of Eden? We're going to make it on day three because day three is when the world was given the ability that people could do things to it and things could grow out of it. In a very physical way, that means that we could put a seed in the ground and a tree will come out of that. In a spiritual sense, that means that we could do a good deed and a spiritual tree will come out of that. But where is that spiritual tree? We need a place. That's the Garden of Eden. When we merit our reward, when we go to the Garden of Eden, we're going to go and we're going to see trees. But those trees are going to be our trees. And we're going to see, hey, one day I study Torah for 45 minutes, and here's my tree. Now, I can't tell you what that tree looks like because it's spiritual, but we're promised that it's going to be a beautiful, unbelievable, blissful experience to bask in the
presence
of that tree. So if you think about it like this, our sages teach us that the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers. The reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. And if we try and understand it in this light, what that means is that the reward of the mitzvah is the tree that grew out of that mitzvah. And that is Gan Eden. Every mitzvah we do, we plant a tree. But what gives the ability to grow? Day three. Day three gives growth to the world. The reward of it is going to be that one day we're going to get to bask in the light of the tree that grew out of those good deeds that we did down here in this world. Now, having said that, I'm going to come to this from a different angle, and I'm going to come back to understanding a little bit better why it is that we don't see that tree today. So the Ramban, Nachmanides, he poses a question, and he says, we live in Colorado, we know that we have aspen trees as an example. Right now, aspen trees don't grow fruit. There's no fruit on them. They're just leaves. Beautiful trees. But there's no fruit on them. Can anybody find me where in the 6 days of creation or on day three, God created the concept of a tree that doesn't have fruit? You're not going to find it. You're not going to find on day three, which is the day of trees, you're not going to find a tree that was told to grow, which is not going to bear fruit. All it says is God says that trees should grow and they should have fruit. Now, we have today in the world trees, many different types of trees that don't have any fruit. Where is that tree from? We know that anything which wasn't created in the first 6 days of creation, even on the first day, will never be. We can't create something new. Nothing could come if you're not going to find it in the 6 days of creation. I heard this one time from Rabbi Akiva Tanz, who, you know, he said it very powerfully. He says, if you can't trace what you have back to somewhere in the 6 days of creation, it doesn't exist. That's it. 6 days, that's all we got. On day three, trees are created and you're not going to find a mention of an aspen tree. You're not going to find a pine tree. You're not going to find a tree that doesn't give fruit. Where do these trees come from? So the Ramban says something incredible. He says, at this point, they didn't exist. He says, at this point, there was no such thing as a tree that did not give forth fruit. He says, after the sin of Adam, when the ground was cursed, then started a new thing that there are trees that don't give forth. But this is a new phenomenon. I mean, it's not new. It's just a withholding of what the tree really should do. But really, on day three, there was nothing that didn't give forth fruit. Every single tree in the world bore fruit. There was nothing in the world that was a tree that didn't give forth fruit. Until the sin of Adam, and now suddenly we have a concept that we have a tree that just has leaves but no fruit. How do we understand this? How are we supposed to give meaning to this concept? On day three, everything gave fruit, and after the sin of Adam, suddenly it wasn't like that. So here's the understanding that was given once again by the same rabbis that I mentioned before. And this is something amazing. The way the world was supposed to be was that every time we did something spiritual, you saw its effect right away. And that's what you would call a spiritual tree. We were supposed to see the trees of the Garden of Eden. We were supposed to see, as we're talking right now, we would just see in front of our eyes the unbelievable spiritual effect that it's having on the world. That's what it was supposed to be. And that's the way the world was before the sin of Adam. And at that point, every tree gave forth fruit because at that point, there was no withholding. Everything you did had an immediate effect. You did an act of kindness. You saw the spiritual ramifications of that act of kindness immediately. There was no such thing as doing something and not seeing its effect. After the sin of Adam, where he brought good and bad into the world and into his body, now the whole world changed. And now there's evil in the world, which God said means that we can't allow the spiritual effects to be seen in this world. Because there's too much evil going on. Now everything's going to be hidden. Now you're going to work and you're going to do good deeds. And you're going to spend a lifetime doing something and you're not going to see a thing. But you're going to have to believe that it's somewhere. But where is it? It's in the Garden of Eden. It's there, but you're not going to see it. And at this point, there was a physical manifestation. The same way that we don't see the effect of our good deeds, the trees in a physical reality manifested that by having a tree that doesn't give forth fruit. This is a mind-blowing concept, and we should really think about this. Everything that goes on up there in a spiritual level will always have a physical manifestation. Where do you have in the world the physical manifestation of devastation of the sin of Adam? You have it by the fact that there are trees that we see today that don't have fruit on them. The same way the trees don't have fruit, our actions, we don't see their fruit. The only difference is that the fruit is there, you just can't see it. Every single thing we do has an effect. The ramifications, the planting of the tree took place. You just can't see it. It's hidden. One day we'll get to the Garden of Eden and we're going to see a place which is full of trees. And we're going to see that every single thing that we did, we were planting. There was a tree, but we're not going to get to see it. The same way that there's going to be trees that you don't see their fruit, there's going to be actions that we don't see the spiritual effect and benefit to the world by what we did. We preach and we talk all day how the Torah is really what's keeping up the world. Now, if you ask anybody out there and you tell them, they tell you you're crazy. You're telling me that the Torah is holding up the world? I don't see the Torah holding up the world. But we have to believe it. But we don't see it. And that was because of the sin of Adam. That we believe that the underpinnings of the world were really planting the trees. But the trees don't grow anymore over here. They grow in a hidden place called the Garden of Eden. And that is a synopsis of what you would call the day of growth, which I would call day three. It's a day where trees grow. It's a day where we could plant and things could grow. The trees of Garden of Eden are created. But because of the sin of Adam, there's going to be a break that we're not going to see the tree, but we have to believe that the tree is there. And that is what I would say point three of what I wanted to say today. And let us try in the last 50 minutes that we have to get into a fourth topic, a big topic. Let's try and wrap our heads around it. So the tree was told, if you take a look at the wording of the verse, the trees were told, but they were commanded by God. If you look in verse 11, eitz pri, there should be a tree, osa pri lamina. The tree should make a fruit the same as its type. That means that the tree should give forth fruit, which is the same as its type. That's what it was told. I'll explain in a minute what that means. And then if you look at the wording of 12, when the tree did it, it just said the eight osipri. The trees made fruit, but it doesn't say that the trees made fruit, which was its type. So Rashi points out, and Rashi says that what happened was that the trees were really supposed to give forth fruit in a way that the tree itself would taste the same as the fruit. There wasn't supposed to be any differentiation between the tree and its fruit, except that one is wood and one is a fruit. But the taste of the wood, the root of the tree, the bark, the trunk, should have the same taste as the fruit. And we have to understand what the purpose of that is. But that's what the tree was told to do. And the tree didn't listen. I'll explain all this. God will. The tree didn't listen. And when the tree actually produced its fruit, it only produced fruit that had taste of fruit. But the tree itself didn't carry the taste of that fruit. So what we have over here is the tree is commanded that it should have the same taste as its fruit. The tree goes ahead and doesn't listen and produces fruit, but it itself doesn't have the taste of the fruit. Now, Rashi continues that the tree needs a punishment for not listening. But it doesn't get a punishment right away. The tree receives its punishment after the sin of Adam. So once again, we have the sin of Adam over here. When Adam does his sin, if you look in the verses, it says over there that the ground was cursed. And the curse of the ground was a punishment for the ground and the trees not listening to God's command to create that the taste of the tree should be the same as its fruit. So this is obviously strange, cryptic, sounds, you know, what do we do with this? What is the meaning that the tree should taste the same as its fruit? What is the meaning that it didn't listen? Can a tree not listen? Does a tree have a evil inclination, a yetzahara, that allows it to disobey God's command? Obviously not. So how could a tree do something, anything different than God commanded it to do? And we also need to understand that if it did and it deserves a punishment, why wouldn't it be punished right away? Why is it? It's only going to be punished after the sin of Adam, which tells us that this thing is somehow related to the sin of Adam. Now, what is the relation between the sin of Adam and the tree not giving forth fruit in a way that the tree tastes the same as its fruit? Right? Those are the strong questions that we need to look at over here. Right? So that's the Rashi. That's the sin of the fruit. That's the time of the punishment. What is this all about? So what I would like to explain, and let's see how far and how deep we can get into this. But what I would like to explain is from the words of the Maharal. We've mentioned it many times. The Maharal lived in the 15th century. He was a great Kabbalist, very deep thinker, and he opened up a lot of worlds that, you know, gave us access to trying to understand them. And he has one of his commentaries is on a commentary on Rashi, on Chumash, called the Gur Aryeh. So the Maharal goes and he explains the words of Rashi, and he says a couple different stages, but let's go through them one by one. Of course, the trees don't have an evil inclination, and of course they can't sin. He writes in a different place that the word sin in Hebrew, chet, chet, the word sin, the actual translation of it is actually a deficiency. It means a lack. What sin really means in Hebrew is, the actual correct translation means a deficiency. And he explains like this. God created the heavens and he created the earth. Now we know that the heavens are holy, the spiritual, esoteric, perfect in a certain sense. The earth is not like that. The earth is very physical, very limited, very finite. Has dimensions, it has things it can do, it has things it can't do. The Maharal explains that the earth by nature is deficient. There's a discrepancy between the heavens and the earth. Without anyone lifting a finger, there's an issue over here. When God created heavens in one way, he created the earth in another way. Because the earth is created with such limited capacity, by nature, the earth is deficient. That means that whatever goes on in heaven will not automatically be able to be translated and go on earth, because the earth doesn't have the same material as the heaven. Well, we'll keep on going back. On day one, God created heaven and he created earth. We explained he created one type of material called heaven. He created another type of material called earth. But they're two very different materials. The material for heaven is very lofty. The material for earth is very physical. Very heavy, very dirty, you can call it, very limiting. So even though we keep on saying that everything that goes on up there will manifest itself down here on earth, but there's always going to be a difference and a discrepancy in the way the earth reflects it than the way it's reflected up there. Because by nature, the earth is deficient by the very means that it's physical. This is what it means. The Maharal writes, there's a verse, and we quote it many times, and we say, Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yachta. There's no righteous person on this earth who will do good his entire life and never sin. Now who said? Why not? Maybe you have a guy that will never sin. Who said there's never going to be a man that never sinned? The Maharal explains, before you started, you already sinned. Because what sin means is deficiency. And by very nature of the fact that we're created from the earth, we have a soul too, but we have a body from the earth. The very nature that we have a body from the earth means that we're deficient. That means that we sinned. Because sin doesn't mean you did, we spoke Lashon Hara, we said something bad, we did an evil act. Sin means a deficiency. And the earth by nature is deficient, which means that a human being starts off deficient. That's what it means, that there's no tzadik ba'aret. Anyone who's living down here on earth has started with a negative because we're deficient, because we're limited. What does it mean that the earth is limited, that the earth is deficient? If you think about it like this, what could the earth do? Zero. The earth can only do whatever we do to the earth. But by nature, the earth has no ability to do a thing. It just stays the way it is. Unless rain comes down from the heavens and makes things grow from the earth. But the earth alone can't do anything, which means that the earth is very, very deficient. It needs, has a big lack, and it needs the heavens to come and rain down and give it its life and allow it to grow. But the earth by nature is deficient. When God commands the tree to grow from the earth and grow from the earth in a way that there should be no difference between the tree and the fruit, the earth and the tree cannot do that by nature because the earth is deficient. When it says that the earth sinned, it doesn't mean that it sinned. It means that its discrepancy showed itself. It displayed itself in a way that it cannot be the same as the heavens. Things down here on earth cannot be the same as what goes on in the heavens. Now you're going to ask me a question. So if this is true, so why did God command it to do it? Right? If it's true, and I'm making sense, that the earth simply cannot be the same as the heavens, and by nature the earth cannot listen and do and produce in a way that the tree, there should be no difference between it and its fruit because it's deficient. So why did God command it? God said it should do it. Was God telling it to do something it can't do? So this gets a little bit deep, but let's try and understand it. The reason why God commanded it to do it is because in a deeper sense, it could. Because from God's point of view, everything is possible. And when he sends things down here on this earth, he sends it down in a way that we could unleash its full potential. But then we get stuck with the earth that doesn't allow. But we could unleash it. That means that when God sends an outpouring of divine understanding down to the earth, he sends it with a full power. But as soon as it enters the earth's orbit, it automatically changes a little bit because it came into the earth. But now, because it came down with full power, we have the ability to try and untap it and get to its true potential. If God would have never told the tree to be the same as the fruit, we would never be able to get beyond it. He told the tree to be the same as the fruit. The tree didn't do it because it couldn't, by nature of it being a tree. But the human being, who, listen carefully to this, the human being comes from the heaven and he comes from the earth. Because we have a soul and we have a body. Soul is God, so to speak, from the heavens. The body is from the earth. So we have within us this unique mix that our brains, our hearts, our soul could understand the full power. The body is limited to the earth, which is deficient. But when we take the power of our soul and we allow that to be unleashed onto the earth, we can then extract from the earth its full power, which was given to it when God told it to be the same. So when we say that the tree did not produce in the same way, that means the tree couldn't. It couldn't do it. It hasn't had the potential to do it because God said it should do it. But by nature of it being deficient, it can't do it. Until the human being comes along and he is able to unleash the potential from the earth. But how does the human being do that? The answer is because the human being has in it something from the Shemayim and something from the Aretz. So if we would say it like this, Bereishis, we're going to go back to this verse again and again. Bereishis bara Elokim. In the beginning, God created Shemayim and Eretz. And he created one being that's going to have in it something from Shemayim and something from the Eretz. And that is us. That is the human being. And by nature, we have Shemayim and we have Eretz. We have heaven and we have earth inside us because we have a body and a soul. The purpose is that we should take the soul, which is unleashed, and allow it to extract all the potential from the earth. How do we do that? We're going to say it again every week. 613 commandments. What does the Zohar write? 613 commandments are 613 solutions. What are they solutions for? This week we're going to say the solutions to how to extract the potential from the earth. Take every mitzvah is done with something physical. When we do, when we shake the four species, what we're doing is we're taking physicality and we're doing a spiritual act to it and we're unleashing its potential. But how do we do it? Because we're limited. We're only limited if we're stuck in the earth. But we have a part of us that's from the heaven and that's unlimited. And if we make those two combine in the human being, we have a winning idea that we could extract its potential. The tree cannot do it because the tree can't do it, but the human being could extract it. Hashem commanded, I'm just going to address your question. Hashem commanded the tree to do it because he wanted to give the tree the ability that inside it, it should have the ability to do it. The tree can't do it until the human being comes along and the human being could extract its potential. The tree can't do it because the tree doesn't have a soul. The tree is just earth, and earth is deficient and it will sin. It won't do the same thing that it's told to do because it can't. There's automatically a discrepancy between heaven and earth. They're not going to be the same. The human being could try and match up the heaven as much and the earth together as much as he can. How does he do that? Because we have inside us heaven and earth. So I have 2 minutes over here. Let me just try and wrap this up. The point is, how did the tree get punished? When we say the tree got punished, it didn't get punished until the sin of Adam. And the reason is because why did Adam sin? With what did he sin? He sinned because he wasn't listening to the heaven part of him, and he was listening to the earth part of him. The earth inside him, his body said, eat from the tree. When he ate from that tree, what he was doing was giving the earth more power. Instead of it being that this heaven and earth, this spiritual and this physical, now by following the physical side of him, he gave the physicality more power. When the physicality has more power, it's punishment. When we say punishment, what that means is it becomes more physical. And when it becomes more physical, you don't see spiritual as much anymore, which means that now we don't see the spiritual effects of our actions, which lead us to what we started with, that we don't see them. They're hidden, but they are there, and they are in the trees, the perfect trees in the Garden of Eden. And I believe that we could say that the trees of the Garden of Eden are perfect. The trees down here are not. When we say that the tree was punished, what it means was that it became more physical. Physical and spiritual are always going to be a seesaw. They're going to go up and down. If we do a mitzvah, spiritual has more power. If we do an avera, physical has more power. It's not a punishment. It's just you're giving power to one or we're giving power to another. When Adam sinned, what he was doing was he was saying that I'm giving power to the physical side of me. Because I'm following it. If you want to follow the physical, God said, sure, the physical will grow. If you want the physical to grow, you're not going to see the spiritual anymore. And suddenly, we'll talk about this later, but after the sin, Adam looks at himself and he says, hey, wait a second. I'm not wearing any clothes. Let me cover myself. But why is it that he wasn't embarrassed before the sin? Because before the sin, the physical part of him wasn't dominant. The spiritual was dominant. And when you're looking at a spiritual body, there's no need to clothe it. There's nothing embarrassing about it. But after the sin, now you want to follow the tree. You want to follow the earth. I'm going to make that bigger. Suddenly you're going to look at your body and you're going to see a very physical body and you're going to say, oh my gosh, I better cover this. But this was the big switch. But it all goes with, are we pushing heaven or are we pushing earth? I hope this last point was clear. It's a little bit deep. Please call me. Reach out to me with any questions or clarifications, but if we could just summarize what we spoke about tonight, this was a big day by all counts, day number 3. We started off by saying that there's water and dry land. By nature, the water should go higher, the dry land should go lower. God made a miracle and he made the dry land go above the water. The next miracle was that the infinite ability of the water, which was everywhere, became limited into one place, but by its nature, it wants to shoot out and flood the world. The correlation between day number 1 and day number 3 is that they're both days of infinity. Day 1 is God's infinite light. Day 3 is the water's infinity. And both of them, God made a space within that infinite space. Day 1, he made the earth, the world. And day number 3, within the water, he made dry land. The purpose is that there should be room for us to operate and try and fill up that space with as much light as we can. We then spoke about the concept that growth, the growth that was put in onto day 3 is the ability that we could plant trees. We could do that on a physical level, and we could do it on a spiritual level. By every good deed that we do, we plant trees. And that's why the Garden of Eden is trees, and it was created on day 3. The reason why the Ramban writes that we have trees today that don't give forth fruit is because after the sin of Adam, like we spoke about, now we don't see the fruits of our action anymore, apparently in front of our eyes. They are there, but we don't see it. There's going to be trees that don't have fruit, and there's going to be spiritual actions that don't have fruit, but they are there, and we will live them when we get to the place called the Garden of Eden. The concept that the trees were supposed to be the same as the fruit is the concept of heaven and earth trying to be the same, but it inherently can't, because the land and the earth is deficient by nature of its physicality, which holds it back, which limits it. And its punishment comes after the sin of Adam, when Adam follows the draw of the earth that increases physicality in the world. And when we increase physicality, there's less spirituality that we see, which means that we're going to live today in a world where we see a very physical world. And if you look at the human being today and you say, what do you see? You see a body or do you see a soul? We see a body. A little bit on the face, we see the soul. The Ramchal writes, Das Tavunas, if anybody's learned that. Ramchal writes that in the face, you could see the soul. He says the face is the only part of the human being which changes based on emotion, right? My hand doesn't change if I'm happy or if I'm sad, but my face does. And that's a window to the soul. But basically, we're living in a world where the physical is dominant, but we, as human beings who are created from Shemaim and from Eretz, we have body and we have soul. Soul from up there, body from down here. We have the ability to span these two worlds, unleash all the potential that's in this earth, unleash it and allow it to connect to God. How do we do that? 613 solutions. When we do that, what we're doing is we're binding together heaven and earth, and that is the growth in the trees that we learn about today on day 3. God willing, next week we will do day 4, which is another big day. It's the day that the lights were created, the sun, the moon, the seasons. It's a very big day. Well, God willing, 7:10 next week, we will reconvene. Thank you all so, so much. And please reach out to me with any questions.
Thank you.